I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. On October 29th, 2012, 2 years ago today, Superstorm Sandy was bearing down on New Jersey and left in its wake 82,000 damaged homes and destruction totaling nearly $30 billion. Some parts of the state were harder hit than others, and some communities have been able to rebuild while others have not. A Monmouth University poll found that just a third of Sandy survivors say the recovery efforts are helping people like them. Today in Radio Times is post-Sandy New Jersey ready for the next direct hit, and have the right lessons been learned? And we're joined by two guests here in our Philadelphia studio. Todd Bates is the environmental and severe weather reporter for the Asbury Park Press, a member of the press's investigations team. His EnviroGuy blog, I'm told, is one of the most popular at the press. And Todd Bates, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is John Miller. He's a water resources engineer, associate with Princeton Hydro, which is in Ringgold, New Jersey, and he's the legislative committee chair of the New Jersey Association for Floodplain Management. And John Miller, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning, Marty.
Nice to have you both here. And Todd, let me begin with you. This is such a silly, basic question. We call it Superstorm Sandy. I called it Superstorm Sandy. What is a superstorm, I asked, 2 years after Sandy hit?
Well, Sandy was actually a post-tropical cyclone when it came ashore near Brigantine, and it had a wind field with tropical storm force winds of about 1,000 miles wide. So it was huge. An enormous storm, and it caused incredible damage in New Jersey and New York and even Connecticut. And 2 years later, thousands of people are still struggling to get back in their homes or thinking about moving.
And I want to pick up on all of that. How do you see the storm?
Marty, I get troubled by the word superstorm.
Do you?
Yeah, and here's why. Superstorm to me indicates that it was an event that won't happen again. And I'm concerned about that because people need to prepare for future events. So I avoid the word superstorm. I use Hurricane Sandy because Sandy was a hurricane very close to hitting the coast of New Jersey. So, again, I'd like to think of it as a hurricane. If you want to call it a post-tropical nor'easter, there's other names you can use, but I like to call it a hurricane because I want people to realize that our risk has not it is not particular to a superstorm. It's particular to a lot of different types of events.
And I'll pick up on that as well. Todd, let me go back to you. And something like $4 billion earmarked for recovery for New Jersey?
Perhaps more.
Perhaps even more than that. How much of that has been actually spent?
Well, I guess many people are still waiting for government assistance or checks. And thousands of people, and apparently the bureaucracy has thrown up a lot of hurdles for people, and a lot of people are still waiting for answers.
Is that bureaucracy in New Jersey? Bureaucracy coming from the federal government? Well, bureaucracy with insurance companies?
Well, the federal government is handing out the money to New Jersey, and New Jersey is processing applications, so it's probably. But both in both cases, and they have to follow a lot of rules to make sure that there's not fraud and people are not improperly getting funding.
What was the hardest part? My understanding is it really was northern New Jersey that was hit hardest by this storm.
Well, Monmouth and Ocean counties apparently were ground zero in New Jersey for Sandy, but Hoboken and Jersey City were flooded, and there was a lot of flooding elsewhere. But Monmouth and Ocean counties, the water level during Sandy was 4 to 9 feet above ground level.
Wow.
The storm tide. So then you put huge waves on top of that.
Well, let me pick up on that and go back to you, John Miller, and talk a little bit more about just sea level rise, water level. The ocean sea level is rising. My understanding about New Jersey is parts of New Jersey are also sinking. They're
subsiding.
So you have these two issues going on with New Jersey. Help us understand that.
It is. Going from Virginia up to the mid-Atlantic area, We are having a combination of sea level rise and land subsidence. So it's a double whammy. It's a hot spot for the changes in ocean elevation and land elevation. So we are going to see more chronic flooding. It won't take a Sandy. It won't take necessarily a nor'easter. We will have more areas inundated just from high tides.
Or heavy rain?
Heavy rain, absolutely. And when you get a combination of a high tide or a lunar high tide and local rainfall, then you have a real bad combination for those lowest-lying areas. They become roads shut down, properties flood, basements, if they exist, will flood. There are utilities that are impacted. So quality of life changes.
And is that even beyond the coastal communities? We're talking inland New Jersey as well?
There are parts of certainly tidally influenced bodies of water would experience these things.
Todd, looks like you want to say something.
Well, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, nuisance flooding, which is basically minor tidal flooding, has gone up about 600% at Sandy Hook since the 50s, and they project that it will increase another 600% or so by 2050, and that means that there will be many more days with just water on the road, maybe blocking people from getting to school or work. So sea level rise is apparently going to become a much bigger issue within the next, say, 30, 40 years.
I remember we've done a number of storms about, I'll not call it Hurricane Sandy, taking your advice there, John, about the fact that the dune system, at least in large parts of New Jersey, where there were substantial dunes, those communities were more protected than ones that didn't have dunes. Is that correct?
Yes. Some communities did very well. Surf City, I guess, and Harvey Cedars, where they had the Army Corps of Engineers built dunes, which were, I guess, 22 feet above sea level. But there were many areas that did not have dunes and still do not have dunes. And the best protection, or one of the best protections, is to have a very wide beach and a very healthy dune system, at least to forestall some storm damage. And in many cases, that's still lacking right now.
And is that just because the money hasn't been spent or earmarked? Or what if that is a protection, what is the holdup?
Well, there are plans to build beaches and dunes up and down the Jersey Shore, but there are, I guess, about 360 easements that are still needed from property owners that would allow the federal government, the Army Corps, to build beaches and dunes on their property. And I think Bayhead has about 130 outstanding easements, but there are outstanding easements elsewhere.
So, John, can we just build a dune system to protect ourselves from sea level rise?
Well, anything that addresses flooding is important. I think your dunes, your beach nourishment are one tool in the toolbox. I think we have other exposures. Todd and I were talking about the back bays. There are areas where a dune would be flanked. It would be flanked from the rear. Dunes are sacrificial type of structures. They are built to absorb the energy, and it certainly is better that the dune absorb that energy than the structures behind the dune. But as we see sea level rise, as we get more storms, a dune and a beach renourishment is, again, one tool. It's not a fix-it-all. We really need to start looking at land use. I like to say that we don't have a flood problem, we have a land use problem. So we have built in very risky areas, and we're going to do what we can in terms of protecting those areas. But there's certain areas that will be, that maybe we can't protect as well.
In fact, Todd, we were talking before the show, you talked about Sayreville in New Jersey, which has been flooded numerous times, or serious flooding, parts of that are, I guess, are sort of giving it back to nature.
Yes, the Christie administration started a buyout program, and they've been offering to buy out from willing sellers people in areas like Sayreville, which had, I guess, three major floods in 3 years.
Wow.
If memory serves. And it looks like most of that neighborhood is going to take the money and move elsewhere. And buyouts are a way to, I guess, reduce further losses and allow areas to go back to nature, become floodplains.
We call it retreat, do we not, John?
It is.
I mean, it's another word for retreat.
I think it's important, too, to talk about at least FEMA buyouts or voluntary buyouts. This is not forcing people out of their homes. It's giving people an opportunity to restart, to reset their lives so that they're not faced with chronic flooding. I think a great example was even before Sandy, when the Passaic River Basin in New Jersey. So they were hit in 2007 by a major event. They were hit again in 2010 and hit twice in 2011. And one of those 2011 events was the record event. So people got religion. People that didn't favor buyouts in 2007 then started to say, hey, I don't want to do this again. I don't want to have to go through this again. We talked about, you know, there's residual effects of these storms. It's not just a structure. It's actually a whole community type of impact, and it lasts not just for the duration of the rebuilding. It lasts for, you know, generations.
Well, yeah, go ahead, Todd.
Well, I talked to a floodplain expert for a story I did earlier this year, and he said, you know, if people get flooded or hit three times, they are much less likely to want to stay there, that's been kind of the track record nationwide.
Well, I would think too. About a minute before our first break here, that I mean, your insurance company is either going to raise your rates or say we're not going to insure you anymore. I mean, doesn't that factor into people's decisions?
Oh yes, there's a big issue with national flood insurance because there was a federal law passed a couple of years ago that basically substantially increases the premiums over time. But the higher that you elevate your home or the more mitigation steps you take, the lower your rate could be, but it would still be fairly high.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are marking the second anniversary of, I'm going to say Superstorm, but I know that our guests wanted to also have us use the word Hurricane Sandy bore down on the East Coast. We are focusing our attention in this hour of Radio Times on New Jersey. And again, Todd Bates is the environmental and severe weather reporter for the Asbury Park Press, a part of the press's investigations team. Also with us, John Miller. He's a water resources engineer and an associate with Princeton Hydro. He's also legislative committee chair of the New Jersey Association for Floodplain Management. And we want to hear from you, especially if you live in New Jersey, have a house in New Jersey. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we are marking the second anniversary of Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, lessons learned and not learned in New Jersey, redefining what recovery is and what the future holds. And our guests are Todd Bates and John Miller, and we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. John, you wanted to jump in on this insurance question.
Absolutely. So we have a couple different insurance products. That Todd just referenced. So we have the National Flood Insurance Program. We also have homeowners insurance. The reinsurance companies are speaking very loudly right now about there are certain areas that we need to take mitigation steps, but there's other areas that may be just too risky to rebuild. And what I'm envisioning is the reinsurance business, and if insurance companies can't get reinsurance, you'll have some areas that are just not being insured. There's just not a product out there to provide that insurance. And Todd mentions the National Flood Insurance Program. Biggert Waters, 2012, was a big change to the National Flood Insurance Program. There was recently the Homeowners Flood Insurance Affordability Act passed in this year, which changed some things of Biggert Waters, but some things remain the same. If you have a second home, if you have an investment property, a rental property, your insurance is, your flood insurance is going up markedly in the next few years. If you have a commercial property, if you're a business, that insurance is going up. And if you've suffered repetitive losses, what are called severe repetitive loss properties, those are going up to actuarial in the next few years. So there are some real big drivers happening right now in terms of pushing for mitigation and also for reevaluating places where we build.
Go ahead, Todd. I mean, it sounds like the insurance companies might end up doing what government has not.
Well, they might make a person think twice about living in a certain area because from what one expert told me, flood insurance costs might exceed property insurance bills in New Jersey, and New Jersey has the highest property tax burden in the nation. So if that occurs, that would be a double whammy on homeowners who live in certain areas.
I want to, Todd, too, and I think anyone who has been to the shore has seen some of this new construction houses being put on stilts or lifted off the ground. How effective, or I guess maybe how common is that when you now look in New Jersey?
Well, it's becoming more common, but thousands of people want to raise their homes. Like the Union Beach administrator told me for a story I wrote that about 170 or 180 out of 170 out of 1,800 homes that were flooded in Union Beach have been raised, but that leaves a lot of other homes that are still on the ground, and so it's becoming more common. But there's a kind of a shortage of homeless lifting companies, which now have to register with the state. So that's an issue. There's only a certain amount of companies who can do this work. Without causing a disaster like a house collapsing, which has happened a couple times.
Right. I mean, these are companies that lift houses off the ground and then you put the stilts underneath it, right?
Yep.
Absolutely. And a nice piece of legislation just passed and the Governor Christie signed was a house elevation company bill. There, my count, and Todd might have a different number, but my count is five have been dropped. On lifting, and
the houses were dropped.
Dropped while they were being lifted, while they were being mitigated. So our association said, "Hey, we don't want this." There were good elevation companies saying this is bad for business. So there is, as Todd referred to, a new registration requirement, and for those contractors to carry the proper insurance to do that work.
Go ahead, Todd.
And there's also an issue of how you should go. And FEMA recommends a certain level. The state recommends a level that's, I guess, 1 foot higher based on state law. But some municipalities have passed ordinances that would require lifting homes 3 feet higher than the state standard, perhaps.
3 feet higher,
right?
Wow.
And even that might not be high enough for certain storms.
So for those people that haven't rebuilt, is it that they don't have the money, there aren't enough contractors or people that can lift homes off the ground? What is the holdup 2 years after Sandy?
Well, it appears to be a combination of all those factors. People are still struggling to get money from FEMA or REM grants, reconstruction, rehabilitation, elevation, and mitigation grants.
A mouthful.
Yep. And then there's probably too few contractors who can do all the work, and a lot of people are just waiting to get enough money to be able to do this because it might cost $200,000 to raise your home.
I'm also thinking, John, I mean, you can't raise roads. You can't, you know, bridges go over rivers or streams. I'm also thinking about the kind of infrastructure that's sort of buried underground. What is the future of that? How do you deal with something like that?
Well, that's a very important issue is survivability of structures, but survivability of community fabrics, and you're talking roads, utilities, you're talking about first responders being able to respond to people having health issues during an event, or you're talking about people being able to survive for days, weeks, maybe even a month without utilities. So these are very important things. While elevation, again, just as we talked about the dunes and beach renourishment, is a tool, elevation is a tool. It certainly is an improvement, but it doesn't solve all the issues when you talk about chronic flooding or, again, some of the low-lying areas that are most exposed to a major event.
I'm also thinking, Todd, about just for people who have homes, whether it's their primary home or a summer home on the shore, just the psychological impact of losing either part of a home or being either homeless or sort of without this property that you so care about.
Yes, it's well. It had Sandy had a tremendous impact on mental health, and many people are still suffering and may even have post-traumatic
PTSD.
PTSD, I talked to a Rutgers professor recently, and she said that it appears that many people still need help, but they're not reaching out for the help. And she speculated it's because they're just still waiting to get back in their home. Huh. They can only deal with so much.
How many people are without a home in New Jersey?
I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it's in the thousands, I would imagine. What do you think, John?
I don't have that total, but I guess Todd referenced Union Beach, and this is in Monmouth County. And I guess Union Beach, I visited not too long ago, and it's really symbolic of what's happening in a lot of towns on the New Jersey shore. You have certainly new homes being constructed. You have older homes that are being lifted, but you also have vacant lots where there has been no rebuilding. There's been a structure there before and it's been removed. And then you have some home. This is what's really impactful, but you have some homes that are just sitting there. They're
empty.
Empty. People walked away and they haven't been back. So you wonder again, what is that situation? Is it the person is financially not able to take on a rebuild? But that makes a difference in a community. When you have some of the community coming back and you have the other parts of the community not coming back, and you have sort of the scattered, and when you go, as it's been in New Jersey, that each municipality has its own methods for recovering from the storm, you don't have really this regional approach. Towns are talking, but they're not really engaging this combined threat of flooding and future storms. So you have a real sort of mixed recovery pattern along the Jersey Shore.
Haves and have-nots, Todd?
Very much so. But as far as a regional approach, I know environmental activists say that there should be a regional approach because it's not necessarily a good thing to have every municipality doing their own thing. And they've suggested that maybe a coastal commission is needed. And that idea was actually first broached by former Governor Tom Kaine in the 80s.
I was going to say that that goes way back.
Yep. But the Christie administration does not want another layer of bureaucracy. Right now, I mean, and in New Jersey municipal land use law very strongly sanctions, home rule. So there are many roadblocks to actually doing, regional planning where everybody's on more or less the same page.
We have a lot of people that want to join our conversation. We are marking the second anniversary of Sandy and the devastation that she wreaked in New Jersey. Todd Bates is the environmental and severe weather reporter for the Asbury Park Press. John Miller is a water resources engineer, associate with Princeton Hydro. And let me get, looks like Dora from Princeton to join our conversation. Hi, Dora. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
You said that you wanted to prefer the term hurricane to Superstorm Sandy, but living in Princeton, it was my impression that we use Superstorm because of insurance rules that would have prevented payouts to some homeowners because of the difference between a hurricane claim and a storm claim. That's my first question.
Sure.
Second question is, you mentioned the Passaic Valley flooding, Wayne, and I grew up in that area, and that flooding's been going on since I was a kid back in the early 60s, which we, over time, began to understand was more attributable not only to the lowland situation, but to upstream development, which is something we've seen in the Raritan River Basin, not too far north of Princeton. There were nights that I couldn't cross the Raritan between home and work in northern New Jersey, and I had to make a circle all the way to the New Jersey Turnpike to be able to cross the Raritan at New Brunswick. So I'd like a comment or two on upstream, and actually I've thought of a third.
Well, you know what? Only because you gave us two really good ones, Dora, and we got a lot of people that want to join us. So let me give this superstorm a name. Do you want to take that, Todd?
Well, Sandy was not officially a hurricane when it hit us. It had lost its tropical characteristics. So for insurance purposes, it officially was not a hurricane in the state. But there was a big debate about whether it should have been called a hurricane with hurricane warnings when it hit the shore, because maybe more people would have evacuated if storm warnings had been more hurricane-like.
Right. The kind of semantic. Well, we could spend a whole hour on that, which I don't want to do.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point. Do you want to talk about the Passaic?
Certainly. And I was on the Passaic River Basin Flood Advisory Commission, which was formed by Governor Christie. I guess certainly. I call floods, especially inland floods, it's sort of a stew, what causes a flood. So you have obviously precipitation from an event. In cases like on the Delaware River, we had in 2005, which was the worst event since the 1955 event. But you had a lot of stored precipitation in the upper part of the watershed. So that kind of stew is snow melt, is ice melt. It's stored water in that watershed. So going back to, again, the Passaic, certainly development has had a role in the repetitive flooding. Increases in rainfall or increases in intensity of rainfall have had a role. You have a lot of building that took place in high-risk areas. You have a lot of, when we looked at, as a commission, building along the Passaic main stem and its tributaries. A lot of homes are in a 2-year floodplain, a 10-year floodplain.
Wow.
So you have a lot of, it's not 100-year or 1% annual chance flooding. You have properties at extreme risk.
Thanks for the call, Dora. Let me get to, it looks like Doug from Trenton to join our conversation. Doug, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks so much, Marty. This
sure.
is Doug O'Malley, Director with Environment New Jersey.
Great.
And I just wanted to thank you for the show and obviously
sure.
thank John and Todd for tackling this issue. Now, in the months after Hurricane Sandy, Governor Christie called climate change an esoteric issue. And obviously, New York got walloped by Sandy as well. And their response in incorporating sea level rise projections from climate change, has been different. And I was hoping that both your guests could just talk a little bit about those differences and the governor's stance on climate change.
Absolutely. Doug, thanks for the call to Radio Times. The ball's in your court. John, go ahead.
There's been some recent, platforms politicians have taken that, no, I'm not a scientist, so I don't, I'm not going to comment on climate change. I'm not a scientist either. I'm an engineer. It's applied science. I depend on scientists making projections, and I use that to influence my decision making. So it's important to use the best data that we have, the best predictions that we have to educate us to make those decisions going forward in the rebuilding after Sandy, but certainly in any building that we're going to do after that. Governor Christie deserves credit very soon after the storm when he adopted for state regulatory purposes advisory mapping, the flood mapping along the coast dated back to the early 1980s. So when we rebuild, we don't want to use that old mapping. So he did the right thing in adopting those advisory mapping before we had The study's complete to come out with better mapping. He also adopted a one-foot freeboard, which had already been in the New Jersey regulations, but he clarified that and he made that. But is 1 foot enough? And our association would say, no, it's not. Looking ahead, knowing that FEMA mapping right now is a static product, it's not showing future conditions. It's showing conditions that are now. Or even when you look at the remapping along the Jersey Shore, the topography that mapping is based on is a pre-sandy topography. So to build in those factors of safety, I like to say if you were building a bridge, if you were building a building, you want that engineer to design in some factor of safety. You don't know if that meeting room will turn into a library at some point. You don't want that floor collapsing. We need to build in factors of safety in the mapping, or at least in the regulatory process, so that when we build, we're building for the long term, not the
building
short term.
Building for the future. Todd, you want to add something? Go ahead.
Well, right after Sandy, DEP Commissioner Bob Martin signed, an executive order allowing all infrastructure to be rebuilt in the same footprint. Didn't say that there would be any upgrades or, but it did allow elevation of infrastructure. But meanwhile, there are projections that the sea level is going to rise about 1.3, 1.4 feet by 2050 and maybe 3 feet or four by 2100. So when you build anything these days, you should probably take into account that the sea level is going to be rising and storm surges will be higher on top of that, as well as the waves on top of the storm surge.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are marking the second anniversary of Superstorm Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, and assessing the lessons learned, perhaps not learned, and looking at recovery efforts and what the future holds as well. And again, our guests are Todd Bates and John Miller. We got a whole bunch of callers that want to join our conversation, and I'm seeing a bunch of comments as well at radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Stronger than the storm? Maybe not so. I'm talking with Todd Bates, the environmental and severe weather reporter for the Asbury Park Press. Also with John Miller. He's a water resources engineer and associate with Princeton Hydro. And we are talking about the aftermath of Sandy. This is the second anniversary of Sandy landing in New Jersey and destroying about $30 billion worth of property and infrastructure. Let me get Anne-Marie from, looks like Cape May, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Anne-Marie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
This topic today.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yes, I have a property down in Cape May, actually North Cape May, which is right on the bay. And there's an organization that has been put together since the storm to kind of keep at bay, and excuse the pun, if you will, the development that the municipality is trying to start, to initiate along the dunes. So I would like your guests, if they could please comment on the impact. We did have a lot of impact. Sandy didn't stay on top of us, but what it did is it went over us.
Right, washed through
and
you.
And there was a lot of flooding. But we really felt that the dunes, the way that they are now and kept intact, really kept a lot of the damage, mitigated the damage. So I'd like to address what type of development on the dunes, how that would affect in the future. You're talking about building for the future, not just now, or
okay,
not building for the future, perhaps. Maybe we need to investigate curtailing the building.
Well, all those questions are very legitimate. I guess I'm back to you, John Miller.
I guess there's certainly, from a national floodplain management standpoint, there's giving room. I guess, and we've seen this in the Netherlands, but it's room for the river, room for the flooding, and that certainly matches what the caller was talking about in terms of giving some space for these dunes or other type of whether man-made or natural structures, to give some room for those to provide that protection. You have in the New York Times just had an article talking about the Big U in southern Manhattan, but building into that wouldn't just be a structural method. It would be structural, but it would also have recreational value. It would have park value, multi-use. And I think that's what we're looking at is in terms of multi-use. If you build structures right up to the edge, whether it's a beach, a stream, a river, you are really limiting what you can do there. And you're really you're putting your property at great risk. And that's what I think the caller is talking about in terms of giving some space, not putting those structures right up against that risky area.
But as we know, Todd, and you mentioned the fact that there's still a number of properties, I guess, that haven't sort of done this okay for dunes, is you've got people with feeling very strongly about their property rights and also its impact on an entire community or perhaps a whole island like something like Long Beach Island.
There are a number of people who are still holding out, who are not agreeing to give easements, and they are holding up the project, according to the officials. And dunes, as I said earlier, a very wide beach and very big dune system, according to Stu Farrell of Stockton Coastal Research Center, is one of the best defenses. Mm. And it takes many years for a natural dune to form, but you can build an engineered dune that I guess would perform about as well. But there have been disputes over dunes blocking views. But if you don't have a dune, you may not have a home.
That's right, to enjoy the view. Back to you, John, and I'm just – when you then think of New Jersey in 2050, let's say – what do you see? What do you envision? I mean, obviously, it depends on weather. It depends on what people do in response to weather. But what do you see?
It's hard to think that far ahead, but we must. What do I see? I would say we're going to see more of those elevated structures. I think that will more predominate the different communities along the coast. I think you're going to see some areas, again, that will be chronically flooded. They will just be they will not be able to be managed. They will be something that affects daily life to the point where there will be calls for more voluntary buyouts. There will be people that we're seeing this already. This is happening in Atlantic City has some areas where, again, a lunar high tide is causing significant it's minor, but it's chronic and it's significant flooding. So but the vision of the coast, I think we're going to start seeing some of that retreat from these very high risk areas. You're not going to go back to a condition like Island Beach State Park. We have developed
with no houses or nothing like that.
Correct. We are going to always have homes. People like to go into vacation. People live at the shore. We're not removing those people, but I could see we need to adapt. It's all about adaptation. It's not rebuilding in those chronically those real low areas. It's giving some space. And it's actually performing multiple mitigation, and it's really going to take time. It's going to take generations ahead of us. It's going to take a lot of resources to accomplish what's ahead.
Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I wrote a story this year, and basically the lead was that much of the shore's future hinges on whether another storm or two hits the area, because Stu Farrell has told me that. He's the director of the Coastal Research Center at Stockton College.
Right.
And his center monitors beaches at the shore. But he said that there's a 1-in-1,000-year storm out there somewhere. Might be 100 years from now. It's a storm with a 0.1% chance each year. And other experts have told me that, a storm might make the decision for us. If you get another Sandy or two in the next 50 years.
Well, and we often think short term, it's been a relatively calm fall, so everyone's kind of feeling the sense of, okay, we made it through this season, but we don't know what the future is, right?
Well, the hurricane season goes through November 30th, and there might actually be a coastal storm of sorts this weekend, probably nowhere near as strong as Sandy, but we're heading into the nor'easter season, and We haven't had a nor'easter like December 92 or March 62 and since those times.
You think we're due or we don't? Or we just don't know.
Well, yeah, experts say you can't say we're overdue, but those storms have happened, and similar storms are likely to occur in the future.
John?
We reflect on Sandy today and the two-year anniversary of Sandy, but New Jersey's had 11 presidential disaster declarations in the last 9 years. So Sandy was the bigger event for sure. It was a magnitude larger than anything we had experienced recently. But we are a repetitive flooding state. You look at the records, and we've averaged one presidential disaster declaration related to flooding in the last 20 years. So, and what is a presidential disaster declaration? But it is truly where local and state capacities are exceeded. So we need the federal government to come in and help us. We need to understand that New Jersey is a flood-prone state. It is at high risk. It's going to affect not only people and people's property values, but it's going to affect the state economies as well.
And I also remember when there was a debate in Congress 2 years ago about releasing money to New Jersey to recover from Sandy. Not everyone was feeling particularly generous, just to sort of throw the politics in. Let me get to, looks like Donna from Sweetwater to join us on Radio Times. Donna, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
As a second homeowner who lost a home in Seaside Park, New Jersey, I am all for beach replenishment and building. I think that's great, but I think that the bigger problem is that we need to get off of our dependence on fossil fuels. They are fueling, not no pun intended, these storms and droughts and all of the weather conditions that are happening across our world. We have too much corporate money and politics, and that is keeping us from becoming an energy-independent country. This past summer, Germany had 75% renewable energy. They were only 25% on the grid, and we don't even think of Germany as a sunny country. So it is possible to do. We need to subsidize clean energy like we are subsidizing and supporting the fossil fuel industry. We need to make a change in the way we think.
Okay, Donna, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I mean, that's obviously a big picture idea as well. But is there a connection, John, between these severe storms and climate change? Has that connection been made? Do you know?
We're starting to see some trends, and I think that's where I rely on the scientific community to provide these answers. I am not a climate scientist, but I know them, and I rely on
some of your friends are, right?
Yeah, and you know, the New Jersey State climatologist is a great person, and that's the person I listen to, Dave Robinson. And he shows us that there are trends taking place. I think I come in from this issue, and I understand the caller's concern, and certainly I am thankful for people that are looking into those issues. And in the climate talk or the climate change talk, you talk about mitigation is actually addressing emissions, and then you have adaptation. So in the floodplain management world, you have actually mitigation is the equivalent of the adaptation. Mm. So that's what I spend my time on, less of the causation and the relationship between climate change. But it's important for people in positions like I have and people making decisions to look at those future those changes in future conditions. And we're seeing that, and that's something that we really have to account for when we're doing our rebuilding and when we're doing our mapping.
Donna, thanks for the call. Todd, you want to add something? Go ahead.
Well, from what I've read and heard, the number of extreme rainstorm or rainfall events is expected to increase with climate change in the Northeast. And there's some evidence that nor'easters have gotten stronger in the along the East Coast, and while there's it doesn't appear that the number of hurricanes is going to increase with climate change, the strongest hurricanes are expected to become or may become stronger, according to experts I've talked to. So climate change may have an influence on storms in the future.
Well, and speaking about the future and even the near future, I'll go back to you, Todd, because you've been covering this recovery in New Jersey. What areas are you looking at, and what are some of the challenges, short-term challenges that still remain?
Well, Union Beach, obviously, is still trying to recover. The administrator estimated that they're about only 50% recovered, and she said for us with boots on the ground, the repercussions from Sandy are far from over. So, and you know, Highlands is still trying to address issues related to Sandy. Many towns along the Bay Shore, Little Egg Harbor, Tuckerton.
And is this sort of like mid-state north? Is that what we're talking about largely?
Well, I think Monmouth and Ocean counties were more damaged during Sandy than, say, Atlantic and Cape May, although right. both those counties sustained damage. But the high storm surge was storm tide was measured at Sandy Hook. It was estimated at 14.4 feet above mean low water. But it was
the gauge failed.
It was about
the gauge failed. It fell. I mean, failed because it was so high.
Yeah.
Wow.
The storm tide there was about 4 feet higher than during Hurricane Donna in 1960 and during the December 11, 1992 nor'easter. So up in the Bay Shore area seems to be where the storm surge was concentrated.
So Tom, what do you hope people living in New Jersey, what do you want them to think about short term even?
I think there's the real contrast between a return to normalcy and future resilience. And that's the real struggle that we're seeing in New Jersey, whether it's municipalities looking at the future and wanting to get, again, the tax base going again, get businesses reopened, get tourism dollars still flowing through there. So that's the real quandary in any disaster. So do you just try to get everything back and running again, or do you try to look long term? Your better leadership is doing that. Your better leadership, and there's some case studies of that where towns are looking at the future and making decisions that way. Overall, though, I think the return to normalcy is overpowering the future resilience. And again, that needs to be encouraged through these federal dollars that are coming in. It needs to be encouraged at the local level to the state level. That we really start to look at that future, because that future will be a now, not too long from now, and we need to really look at what is going to drive the local economies, what's going to drive the state economy. And I would say that if we look at that resilience and we really take that seriously, that will be a real improvement to the economy of New Jersey and its communities. So that's basically how I respond to that. Now, how does the homeowner figure into that?
You have 10 seconds for that.
Oh, okay.
I'm
yes,
sorry.
Certainly.
No, go ahead.
But the homeowner basically has some, some real challenging decisions to make in terms of whether to rebuild.
And homes are very personal things. My thanks to both of you. John Miller, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Todd Bates, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Todd Bates, the environmental severe weather reporter for the Asbury Park Press. And again, John Miller, a water resources engineer associate with Princeton Hydro. We appreciate those phone calls to Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download podcasts, how to find us on satellite radio, and how to check us out on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.